It's an early stage in a negotiation that is beginning between the United States and China.
China talks about free trade as it hosts an expo for international companies. It's Tuesday, November 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, talks continue with North Korea. Asian Americans prepare to vote. New Caledonia votes no for independence. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping said Monday that China would take steps to widen access to its markets as he opened a huge trade fair amid criticism from other countries about China's economic and business practices. Speaking at the trade expo in Shanghai, Xi pledged to, quote, embrace the world as China promotes the growing consumer market in the world's second largest economy. Xi said, China's open door will not be closed. It will only be opened wider. China will not stop taking steps towards promoting a higher quality of opening up. China will not stop taking steps toward establishing an open world economy. Do the Chinese president's remarks change the ongoing trade war between the U.S. and China? VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about that with Peter Petrie, professor of international finance at the Brandeis University International Business School near Boston.
It's an early stage in a negotiation that is beginning between the United States and China. As you know, President Xi and President Trump spoke with each other by telephone a couple of days ago. And it was by both sides, it was reported to be a reasonably positive conversation. And they will meet at the end of November in Argentina at a G20 summit meeting. So they are both at this point trying to figure out how to position themselves for a discussion that I think both hope will yield some results. In that context, I think what President Xi said was reiterating many of the initiatives that China has been already taking to reduce tariffs, to sponsor this very big expo, to increase intellectual property rights enforcement. But there was really nothing particularly new in what he said. So he's basically reiterating China's effort to continue to open its markets, but not yet promising anything specific.
Had there been anything specific expected from this address?
I don't think one should have. You know, some people were disappointed that he didn't go further into specifics. But, you know, this is going to be a very complicated negotiation between China and the United States. It's going to take a long time. It's going to take a lot of staff work on the part of both countries. And I don't think one could have realistically expected him to become more specific at this stage.
Do you think there is a point of no return when the two sides, the U.S. and China, can get together, or is it still part of the posturing between the two countries?
I certainly hope it's that. But depending on when you listen to whom you listen, there have been some very harsh words said, and particularly by Vice President Pence. And in a way, he was asking China to make changes that President Xi would have great difficulty making. So, if you listen to that speech, you would have been gloomy. But on the other hand, there are many other voices coming out of both Washington and Beijing that suggests that both countries ultimately will want to work toward a solution.
Peter Petrie, professor of international finance at the Brandeis University International Business School near Boston, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Activists urge deep scrutiny of China at UN rights gathering this week. China, distrusted in Asia's chief maritime dispute, offers to share data. Grief and anger overflow as families confront a silent lion air. In expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is meeting his North Korean counterpart Kim Jong-chol in New York this week. Pompeo said he is confident both sides will advance the ball this week and expressed no alarm over last week's warning from Pyongyang to expand its nuclear arsenal unless the United States lifts economic sanctions. At the same time, the United States and South Korea have begun 2 weeks of small-scale military drills involving hundreds of U.S. and South Korean Marines, maneuvers suspended in June. A decision on resuming larger-scale exercises in 2019 is expected next month. Joshua Pollack, Senior Research Associate at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies, was asked by VOA's Victor Beatty if North Korea will object.
I would imagine that they may say something if they choose to, if they feel that it is against the spirit of the recent agreement on military affairs that they signed with the South Koreans. But as long as it's within the terms of that agreement, they won't have a leg to stand on. I don't think that they're seeking an excuse to disrupt that agreement. So while they might comment on it, that doesn't mean that anything will come of it.
Pompeo said he would be in New York City at the end of this week to meet with Kim Jong-chol. Quote, I expect we'll have some real progress, including an effort to make sure the summit between our two leaders can take place where we can make substantial steps toward denuclearization. What do you think of those comments?
This is symptomatic of how diplomacy between the two sides has proceeded from the start. Everything is connected to a summit, and it seems that the two sides cannot engage constructively and work out an agenda, advance it at the working level. Everything has to be handled at the Secretary of State level, and no fruitful discussions happen at any lower level. It gets to the point where you wonder what the point of appointing an envoy was. I also wonder what the two sides really expect to come out of this summit. It seems that the North Koreans have found that they can get what they want from President Trump in a way that they can't from others. And I don't know what the United States really expects at this point.
What is North Korea getting from the U.S.?
They have gotten a suspension of the large-scale annual combined exercises. And they have gotten a different tone in relations and the validation of a summit meeting, one and quite possibly two now, with the President of the United States. That, in turn, has put them in a different position on the world stage. They are less isolated diplomatically.
Joshua Pollack said last week's North Korean warning was issued by an individual from a group associated with the foreign ministry, suggesting it was muted, not from a senior official, and did not represent an immediate threat. However, he said it appears the North is on course to produce missiles and nuclear weapons on a mass scale, as leader Kim Jong-un stated in his New Year's Day address in January. Asian Americans currently make up 3% of the seats in Congress in the U.S. government, but with more Asian candidates running in the midterms, that representation may increase. VOA Asia's Anna Cook spoke with Madeline Milka, president of APAICS, a nonpartisan organization dedicated to promoting Asian-Pacific American participation and representation in politics. Milka explains the marked increase of Asian Americans running for office this election cycle.
We started with 5 in 2000. We have 18 now in 2018. And so the increase of visibility of our AAPI leadership has grown. We have Asian Americans who have been in statewide office in certain states. And then we also have more of them running progressively in the sense of their career trajectory. So running for a state legislative race and then now running for a statewide office. And so as you see more Asian Americans running, I think that's also compelled other Asian Americans to see themselves as potential elected officials.
Do you think that this is a good state that we're in, or do you think we need more to be representative of the Asian American population here?
Is this a good state? It is a it's a good start. So, you know, the Asian American population is 5.8%, and we only have 3% in terms of elected officials. So, obviously, that's room to grow. And with our population also increasing in the years to come, that also means that representation also has to grow in that percentage. So, having that increase has been great to see through the course of time, and so we hope that it continues to increase.
From the research that I've read for this midterms, it seems like a lot of candidates, Asian candidates, are running in the Democratic Party, and it seems like voters are, you know, Asian voters are leaning Democratic. What do you think about that? Is that a growing trend that's unique to this cycle?
Is it a growing trend that Asian Americans are leaning more Democratic? You know, as a nonpartisan organization, we encourage all Asian Americans to vote, be a part of the electoral process, and we think that it's important for their Asian Americans to identify with their values, regardless of what that means in terms of their party affiliation. And so, you know, as we see more Asian Americans running for office and as them self-identifying as Democrats, you know, it's just a reflection of what the population is doing in terms of their own values.
You mentioned that there's more people running this year. Do you see that there will be more seats elected for Asian Americans?
More seats in the caucus, we hope so. You know, with 14 potential new members, that could be a great number for us, considering that we went from we increased the caucus by 4 last year on last election cycle. So, you know, anywhere in between that 1 and 14 would be you know, a bump for us.
On this politically historic election eve, Madeline Milka, the president of APA-ICS, a nonpartisan organization dedicated to promoting Asian Pacific American participation and representation in politics. She spoke with VOA Asia's Anna Cook. Coming up, another election says no. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia: distraught and angry relatives of those killed when a Lion Air jet crashed last week have confronted the airline's co-founder during a meeting arranged by Indonesian officials. The Lion Air jet crashed into the Java Sea October 29th, just 13 minutes after taking off from Jakarta, killing all 189 people on board. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day, see and share our stories. As VOA Asia continues, a majority of voters in the South Pacific archipelago of New Caledonia Sunday voted to remain part of France rather than pursue independence. With participation by nearly 81% of eligible voters, nearly 57% of those casting ballots chose to maintain ties with Paris, which has ruled the territory since the mid-19th century. Natalie Doyle, senior lecturer in French studies at Australia's Monash University, tells VOA voters are looking for some change even by voting no to independence.
I think that the population realizes that on their own, they are not strong enough to resist the kind of influence, for example, that the Chinese may wish to exercise in the region. So yes, on the one hand, they want to keep it as they are, but on the other, as I said, the vote does suggest that they want to have more accommodation of this specific cultural identity of this part of the world, and that they probably also want to see the inequalities that exist addressed more forcefully by the French state.
The referendum was part of a 30-year process of decolonization, and two more can be called under the so-called 1998 Noumea Agreement by the year 2022. The referendum also comes amid growing Chinese influence in the region. Despite rich deposits of nickel, New Caledonia, located east of Australia, has relied on French subsidies to bolster its economy. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Many of you have been listening on the radio throughout Asia. We thank everybody who's tuned in today, especially those who were listening on U Radio of Hatay University, FM 101.25, Hatay University in Thailand. Thank you so much for being with us today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Aydin Utku, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.